Shoes. Recorded live.
Hi, my name is Will Morgan from A Few Shots to Shaman. I'm with, as usual, Douglas Boyle from A Mask of God. You're listening to 42 Minutes. And we just happen to have Kevin Halcott from Live from the Logosphere with us today. Actually, last week, I think that we pretty much ended off with talking about, I think, whether sync was an art or a science, meaning whether it was just making beauty out of reality or if there's actually some kind of predictive ability about it. So, I mean, before Doug tells us about what he read with Goro Adachi's part in the Sync book, Kev, I want to know what you think about that question. Is Sync an art or is it a science?
I guess, I guess it's really both, you know, I don't know. I guess, like, at what point does art separate itself from a science, you know, like a master of mixing colors to reflect, like, the aesthetic of a certain leaf or something. Like, it's hard for me to not see that as, like, a little bit scientific, you know, to try and reproduce beauty or, like, reshape beauty, you know? So, I don't know, when I think about that, I think it's definitely both to me. Like, I certainly feel like there are certain tools and instruments through which to, like, engage with sync, but at the same time, I think you can use sync to create your own mythos in a way, or like whatever mythos, you know, you want to live in for the day or something, you know. So I guess my answer is I definitely just feel like it's kind of both, you know. There's definitely an art and a science to it, you know.
So, I mean, do you think it's more closely related with art, though? I mean, don't you think, because it is a study in art, just trying to kind of make, like, it's a scientific look at art, maybe, and how there's
here's
there's
what
something.
Goro says, Will, all right? He's calling synchronicity a multi-contextual perspective, which is also another way of saying a quantum view. And he also says that most of us have this ability to see multiple perspectives. You know, he's calling it like sync radar, but he doesn't say sync radar. Mm-hmm. And so he alludes how people who read poetry or any other symbolic art, you know, have this ability to see different simultaneous perspectives occurring, you know, together. But what he says is that art stops short of actively seeking hidden future knowledge possibilities. So he's saying that what we do is predictive out of it's just basic, not necessity, but just, I don't even know how to say that. But so it's art. The point of art is to capture the transcendence, but he thinks that sync is going beyond that in, because his whole piece is about truth and possibility and how it's interesting. He doesn't ever say it, but what he is a black swan hunter. He's trying to find the secret route to get to where he needs to go into individuation quicker so that he can become.
But see, okay, black swan hunter, he thinks he can predict black swan events through looking at media, like smashed in together, like hodgepodge.
Right. It's predictive, right. And he goes on to say, you know, that he's predicted all these different things toward the end of the piece. It's a fun one. It's a good one. It's interesting how well it jives with your piece, because your sync book piece, Will, was all about possibility, you know? And you're, you know, at the beginning you're saying how, you know, which path do you go down, because, you know, the paths are infinite. You know, it's all, there's so many possibilities, and where do you really sink in at? And, you know, so Goro focuses in on the notion of truth and the universality of truth and how truth is timeless, the more true it is, and therefore think it's like a time machine. So if you're reading the signs correctly, you found the time machine to lead you to your black swan, which will lead you to where you need to be, which is that possibility that you're trying to realize.
Goro Adachi is Nicolas Cage's character in The Knowing. See, it's curious to wonder if they're doing that on purpose, though, because I've heard the CIA is using all of this has to do with mix, you know, multi-contextual or mixing different parts of pop culture. What William Burroughs was doing with cutouts, and he actually said he could predict the future with cutouts too. It's the manipulation of language. And now we have projects like WebBot, which is going out there and searching down word patterns and stuff to predict the future. That same thing that Goro's doing. Goro's just doing it by hand. It's going to work. Of course it's going to work. But the question is, why does it work? And the funny thing is it's coming out. Like, people know this. That's what that movie, The Knowing, is all about. It's the Nicolas Cage uses these patterns that he sees to predict future events. And then the last event is an EE, or it's a 33, because it's an E turned backwards. It's a WE3 spinner. So it's a direct symbol for the manipulation of language that mirrored look, that cut out kind of William S. Burroughs thing going on. It's like you're rearranging the letters. That's the common bind, I think, is how it's just reshuffling the information you're getting. This brings up what I wanted to ask you about too, Kev, and that's that movie I was telling you about I just watched with Super. The thing that I found interesting about Super was that all his major decisions were made based off the media he was watching, mainly the TV. Like, even the event that happens to him in the movie, he's sitting there watching TV, and he sees that animation cartoon with the girl, and it's very, you know, big booties, and she's being pinched on by these tentacles. Those are the same tentacles that hold him down and cut open his brain before God touches it with his finger, his rightful finger. And then later on, every decision, when he's asking for signs of God, he watches the TV to get the sign that he's asking for. And people like Philip K. Dick, who was trying to figure out what happened to him, because it's basically the same thing. Philip K. Dick thinks his brain got touched by God, and he realized that was true based off of watching movies and TVs and listening to records that were talking to him. And a ton of other people. I've heard tons of other people, famous people, who've been influenced in their life because a movie told them what to do. Like the guy who killed Lennon, tried to kill Lennon twice. The first time he didn't because he went and watched a Robert Redford movie. Thought that fact was interesting. How that relates to your theory of the film membrane of film, and how film is that movie screen separates us from God.
Wait, so that brings up just something interesting. Do you think what we're doing is basically advocating schizophrenia to a mass population?
Yeah. But it's controlled schizophrenia, and actually I think it could help understand schizophrenia.
Yeah.
But really, I mean, is film, Kevin, are linked to God?
I think so. I think it's. I was thinking about this just yesterday, and I'm glad I have an opportunity to like think about it a little more. Like, you know, the idea about the film being like the membrane to the toward our spiritual and like formless nature and stuff like that. Like, I really feel like film is like the window to the extrasensory world that we actually live in, you know, outside of this physical one in a way, you know? And so I think it's our direct connection to God, but we always have that. So I feel like the screen is just this place where we can go and, like, actively engage in, like, you know, dramatic narratives and, reality bending ideas and stuff. So like, I feel like it's the place where we consciously go to bend our perception of what's real and possible, you know? So I feel like we're always living in this membrane, this bridge between heaven and earth. But like, when we go to the theater, I really feel like we sit down and we almost, when I think about us looking forward onto the screen, I actually feel like we're looking right back into our own head, you know, like, I feel like, you know, the pantheons of, you know, gods and deities and mythologies and stories are all stored, like, right in our head. So when we're looking at the screen, we're really, I feel like we're just projecting what's in the great head already, you know? And so I don't think it, like, I don't think it's separate, like, I don't think that the film actually separates us from the, is actually where the spirit world borders this world or something, you know? But I think it's where we go in the form world to, like, absolutely face some of the formless realities that we can potentially understand, you know?
Right.
And
does that have your piece in the Sync book? I mean, is that what you wrote about or no?
Yeah, I mean, pretty much. Like, I read it again, and it's funny. I really wish I had spent some more time with it, but it was a really busy time. But looking at it now, I guess what I'm trying to do is make a case for the fact that we have a greater knowing about a spiritual reality and a spiritual nature of ourselves that we are currently waking up to, you know? And so I guess what I'm trying to say with my piece is that film is a way through which we can find evidence and pointers toward this spiritual reality and toward these ideas of gods and energies and forces beyond the physical and stuff. So I guess I'm really just making a case for all of these extrasensory realities using film and the idea of the screen being a membrane into our own personal inner worlds and the shared inner world, you know. So yeah, I feel like my piece kind of does that, but the more I read it, it kind of seems like I'm really just trying to make evidence for how kind of charged and ancient and, you know, spiritual our pop really is, you know. But I do kind of wish I could have went deeper on a few subjects, you know.
I enjoyed your piece a lot, Kevin. I really liked the second half of it better. And I'm trying to remember why that was. It seemed like the way you wove in both Patrick Swayze and Keanu Reeves toward the end was really good. So you introduced us to Sync, but then showed your own path.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess at some point I wanted to, I definitely made it. And a lot of my writing reflects the kind of Robert Anton Wilson, like, Cosmic Trigger style of writing.
Can we talk about that in a sec? But let's have, I think Tommy just called in, but he's going to have to adjust the volume, or else he's...
Sorry, I'm
turn the volume on the computer.
Yeah, sorry about that. Hey, guys.
It's okay. Welcome, Tommy.
Hey, how's it going?
Great.
Good.
Tell me,
what?
Kevin... You've read the Illuminatus trilogy then?
You know, I've read through it, but I've actually never completed much of it. You know, it's been more of like a leisurely approach to it.
Because I've been spending quite a bit of time in the first book of the trilogy, The Eye in the Pyramid, and it is a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. But I can see how... I mean, just like Philip K. Dick, Stephen King, and Robert Anton Wilson, as far as Sync goes, they're really creating like a structure that they're not saying this is what this is, but they're definitely utilizing the same tools that we do, you know, with the conspiracy and then the joking about the conspiracy and then the multi-contextual perspective, you know, because it moves from character to character so fast, it's hard to keep up. And then I can definitely see that I'm going to have to read this thing again relatively
soon.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, the thing about it is it's almost if you try to read it again, it's almost a different book.
Oh, I can see that.
Well, you need to read The Cosmic Trigger, too, if you haven't, because after It's really
weird.
Do you
think you should read that first? Or?
No, definitely the Cosmic Trigger should come after, because he writes the Illuminatus trilogy, and then the Cosmic Trigger is basically what happened to him while he's trying to get the Illuminatus trilogy published. So it's written after Illuminatus, but it's basically the story of like it the decade it took to get that thing published and what was happening to Robert Anton Wilson on a personal level. Cosmic Trigger is very, very valid. It's very personal.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's real good.
Before we forget about Tommy, is that you?
Yeah.
What were you saying?
I was just recommending Cosmic Trigger. It's a really good book.
Now, I want to ask you what your piece in the Sync book was about.
Who, me?
Yeah, you.
Okay.
You're in, aren't you?
Okay, first let me apologize. Y'all are already, like, talking to Kevin and everything. I feel like I'm intruding a little bit. But,
oh, no, that's right.
Okay. Wow. I just woke up, so it's like, oh, my God, and Kevin posted something on Facebook. But
well, so yeah. I've never spoken to you, Tommy, so this is a lot of fun for me.
Oh, cool. Doug, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, because I've talked to Will and Kevin before. But, okay, basically my thing in Sync Book was about mainly just a bunch of science. I haven't read it in a while, but it's really close to your piece, actually. I was really amazed at the similarities in in what we talked about. Basically, a lot of people seem to think, nature is just, stuff just dies, and then, it goes away forever, but it's actually, a process that is always improving upon itself, and I think... what I heard about Sync actually is that everything is sort of synchronized to this cycle, so it only figures that we would all be able to connect on a symbolic level. But I'm trying to I'm kind of racking my brain trying to think about it. So maybe we should leave that for another time. I guess I don't know. Because I'm really having trouble remembering exactly what I wrote about.
That's okay.
Because I read it a couple weeks ago, and I enjoyed it, but it was really dense as far as some of the pieces go. It wasn't too dense. It was good. It's interesting though, because it's almost like the way I felt is like you opened a door. Instead of a lot of times people say here's this concept of Sync or whatever, and then they show you their own path, but you kind of opened the door into Sync and then took us into it, and it was almost like a psychedelic trip. You were explaining this space not from outside but inside.
Really?
And so
do you think that Sync has changed your perspective on death?
On death?
Time? I mean, has it changed? Has it given your science-orientated mind, more of an assurance of the spiritual?
Basically, yeah. I mean, I wouldn't say I'm very, science-oriented. I mean, when I was writing my piece, I was reading a lot of... I was reading Cosmic Trigger, actually, and I was reading The Invisible Landscape. So a lot of the influence comes from Invisible Landscape, actually. So if you read that book, you'll find a lot of stuff that I was talking about, the whole holographic theory and all that, which I think, really ties everything together. Because if everything is holographic, meaning that, what's here is everywhere, what isn't here is nowhere, basically, then Sync all makes sense. It's just a given in reality.
I've heard quite a few people say that, which it makes it so every piece is it has the whole in it.
It contains the information of the whole, maybe not the whole object, but we have our minds basically contain a whole universe. So it's the information of the whole, basically I consider the information of the whole to be the process, the current process we're in. Like the other day, like I'll just go on these like trips basically in my own mind, like without any drugs or anything. I'll just like follow a line of thought and it'll just take me anywhere. And I was thinking like, you know, the current moment in time is like how we're all connected basically. Like I would look up at the sky and the stars and stuff and be like, you know, I'm existing in the same moment as like Jupiter or like like a bunch of stars and stuff, and like I'm obviously not my body, you know.
You're obviously not your body.
Huh?
I said you're obviously not your body.
Yeah, because like your body's always changing. Like your body is never the same as it was. I mean, nothing is ever the same as it was like a few minutes before, even a second before. But identity like persists through the whole process. So your identity must be in the process. Like your identity must be the process that everything is undergoing. It seems to be like synchronized to one thing, you know, like the process itself. But I feel like discovering sync is an extremely important part of the process, actually.
I mean, your like own personal development, you mean?
Huh?
Do you think that sync is accessible to everybody, guys? I mean, do you think that everybody will go through the same process as far as like, you know, broadening our worldview or our philosophy of what was before sync to now? It's all been beneficial to all of us, but do you think that everybody, that's attainable to everybody? Can anybody understand this stuff, or are some people just turned off to it?
I think they are, like, all the time, and they don't really realize it. Because we are all synchronized. Like, we're all living in this same moment. Like, you know what I mean? Like, we're all synchronized. Whether we know it or not.
And, like, we all use the word like, you know, like, you know, you're at work and some guy walks in, looks like Santa Claus, you know, like, hey, that guy looks like Santa Claus. Like, you're, like, sinking, you know, like, right there. Like, every time we play with that, it's, like, just so natural. But I think we definitely get really fine with it. I mean, that kind might be a little more inaccessible, you know. But, yeah, I think everybody does it.
Yeah.
Goro addresses this in his piece also. So he thinks sinks are, like, road signs. Mm-hmm. And that anyone can see the road signs, but to actually make the road signs meaningful, it takes not a special individual, but an individual willing to be open to where the road sign is telling them to go. So like he likened it to Noah or Jacob climbing the ladder.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not everyone who's going to be able to say, oh, look at, you know, this is, but that's the, back to this, you know, the advocating schizophrenia again, you know, is it really a good idea?
Well, it's just, I don't know, man. It just feels like there's something, we're climbing stairs. I thought that was interesting about what, I don't know if you guys saw what Richard Aerosmith was fooling with, but he was talking about all the stairs in the movie posters that are out right now. Point to the ascension of the Mayan calendar and everything, which is really important right now because we're coming up on 11-11-11. Mm-hmm. And it's just the stretch of movies that are opening up on this day. I mean, of course, there's one called 11-11-11, but there's also Into the Abyss is some movie coming out, which is very suggestive, but of course, Immortal. I mean, is there anything that...
Yeah.
This is the beginning of the Christmas holiday, and there seems to be certain dates have a significant or have significant think-wise in the material that comes out on those days. I mean, that's no illusion in my... I think that's been with Jake's work on birthdays and everything. I think it's pretty definitely shown. Are you guys seeing that we're coming to a certain point or a certain head here? Or is this just proving that everything's connected and we could do this till the day we die?
So we've done this long enough to go around the cycle of time like two or three times now, and so we're being able to create annual patterns And now what I'm wondering is this something we can do anything with, or is this just... So the first time I took the lap, as Eunice know, I decided to kill that avatar because it's like, okay, I've done this. I don't need to do this again. This is all there is. But now I don't know, because it's like the Gnostic mythology where we need to rise above the cycle. And this is what I'm wondering about, whether or not we can, like, we're in a fallen state and we need to change the pattern and somehow rise above this.
See, I don't know if that's a healthy outlook, though. See, I've had that outlook before, that, like, there's, like, some terrible ending that happens in, like, 2012, and we've been through it, like, 100 times. We just keep replaying the same game over and over. But because of that, let me finish.
Oh, it's down. It's down.
Come on. I mean, I don't think that's healthy, though. I don't think that that's like, I mean, it seems that that could possibly be true, that we've just done this a couple of times. But
what if there were no grown-ups? Suppose the whole idea of grown-ups was an illusion. What if money was really just playground marbles, their business deals no more than baseball trades, their wars only games of guns in the park? What if they were still snotty-nosed kids inside their suits and dresses? Christ, that couldn't be, could it? It was too horrible to think about.
Oh, man.
So this is what I'm trying to advocate, is that somehow we're all creating reality together, and that if we all... If we all know that, I don't know, that's the hard part, then we're all individuals, but we're also part of this whole, that we share responsibility for creating the kind of world that we want to live in.
It's just like this long process of man becoming God, man.
Mm.
And it's taken a billion years, and it's just, I don't know, but it's just, thing to me, and I understand the holographic universe and stuff, but the most special thing to me about it is the sense of humor. Like, this shit has a sense of humor.
Uh-huh. Yeah, sure. Right. Aleister Crowley said a funny thing once. He said, "The universe is a practical joke played by the general on the particular." So it's like ourselves, you know, constantly leading ourselves into deeper, funny union with everything that is already us or something, you know?
Yeah.
Right.
See, I've been thinking nature itself, nature meaning everything, like anything that's tangible, even your mind is like a part of nature. You know, when you really think about it, everything you can think about is already here in some
right.
weird way. Like, I was basically laying in bed trying to get some more sleep earlier, and I was thinking, like, what if, like, all this weird stuff that I imagine, like, I imagine some guy attacking a blob with a toothbrush, and then it swallows him, and, like, he goes through a Stargate. I don't know why I was thinking about that, but I was like, maybe that happened somewhere. I was like, maybe, you know, and I got to thinking, like, nature itself has a mind, and everything expresses itself, you know, like trees. Like, I don't think the color we see or the beauty of anything we see is just our mind. You know, it's just our individual interpretation of it. I think trees are expressing themselves because they have the same, maybe not exactly the same process of mind that humans do, obviously, but I see everything as basically having its own mind, and mind just being a different density of reality. Like a different energetic transaction, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Makes sense to me, but
it's difficult. That's difficult because there's got to be some kind of misinterpretation. I mean, basically what I got out of what you just said was that, like, a tree, the beauty we see of the tree is the tree. It's not our interpretation of the tree being beautiful, but the tree is truly expressing itself. I mean,
well, it's both. It's like if you're able to see the beauty of the tree, then you kind of have a connection with the tree in a weird way. I mean, I'm outside right now. I look at trees all the time. But
Kevin, were you the one talking about ascension?
What's that?
Who, or was that, was it you, Will, that was talking about ascension? Who? I want to know what you guys think. Okay, let's say this is a game. What's the point of the game? Is the game to, is, because I like to think of your thin membrane or film as kind
right.
of like the container, like a hot air balloon. And it's actually what contains that little bit of you for a time. Recently, Tom Waits was on the NPR, and he called life, this is death taking a vacation. You know, so like there's a purpose.
Mm-hmm.
It's fun to not be eternal for a time, you know, to be temporal for a
mm-hmm.
little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And so it seems like within our community, there's a couple goals as far as when we start having, you know, these long-winded discussions. And one is either to really be embodied spiritually, and the other is to, like, completely unembody and become pure spirit. And so
mm-hmm.
it seems that's an interesting starting point as far as what people think the notion of transcendence or the notion of illumination is it to transcend material or to become even more illuminated in material, you know?
I would say the latter.
Yeah, like I wondered when you were saying about the game and like the point of it, that's something I've been thinking about too. And yet, like you're saying how we're having these kind of annual syncs and we're seeing the way the story is, you know, cyclic and stuff. So where's the end? What's the goal, you know? I'm just thinking about it personally, like, you know, like right now I'm like meditating on the blog and stuff and personally, like, you know, meditating on the Scorpio thing. And so for me, it's like the goal for me, I guess, is to take in the truths, you know, material and spiritual and unite them as they come, you know, and like I just feel like we live in a time where the materialist ideas of existence and, you know, all these limitations on possibilities that science presents and stuff, I feel like Sync does a really great job of like updating consciousness through the cycles of the year constantly. So I kind of just hope that our work flourishes the relationship between man and nature or self and self and just enriches it more and more so that more and more people experience like direct truth, you know? And so I don't know what that is for everybody, but for me, the direct truths, you know, are spiritual truths, but they're not because they're just truths to me, you know, but I guess the goal is to me to just, you know, harvest the gnosis and plant that again and just see how we all continue to grow through the cycles, you know, and I think the goal is to kind of pass the gnosis on, you know, not to necessarily be able to, you know, spiritually enlighten the crap out of yourself before who knows what happens or something, you know, like I see it as more of like a harvesting for the self and for everyone to maybe have a more fuller personal experience, you know.
Well,
the self-esteem prophecy, I've been thinking a bunch about the self-esteem prophecy because I read it when I was 19 years old. It was James Redfield. It was the name of the guy who wrote it, and it was his first book, I think, that he ever wrote. So I kind of critique it as just a moderately decent book. But the first insight is to recognize synchronicities. The second insight is to realize that means we were all joined together and that we were all going towards one purpose and we were all giving ourselves these luxuries of like vehicles and a comfortable life and technology and everything to have more time to spiritually advance ourselves.
Mm.
And I feel like that's becoming more and more true, or I'm critiquing that a lot less. Instead of just seeing it as a guy who was trying to write a story, seeing it almost like an early bird who was trying to express something but didn't know how.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like we're on the fucking cutting edge of everybody just realizing that the synchronicity mean or what it means. Like when you first look at it and you start getting all excited and everything, but it kind of kills your head because you can't figure out how the hell it could be purposeful.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But so here's something that I always think is interesting. When you watch Jake, his practice, I mean, it's obvious that the way he deals with sync is more like a Zen practice where he's not trying to get anything out of it. He just does it, and that keeps him in harmony with the universe. It's like his own form of yoga, which is that's not necessarily the only way, because I was thinking last night how, like in medieval grail quests, one of the things that would happen is all the knights are there together, and then all of a sudden they go out and say, let's have an adventure, and then they all go shooting off into the woods in different directions, and they kind of end up having to follow their own path. And it's not a path that's there, that, you know, like they're chasing a deer through the woods or something. And so, like, that would be like another, where you're going to chase the sink and see where it takes you, you know, not because any other reason than just to see where the adventure will take you, which might be the same thing, but it might be different too, which is, and I think I tend to fall more in that.
I think that I lean more towards Jake's interpretation than Goro Adachi's, because I don't see how sync can be a commodity or something that you can use as merchandise. I think that it is more of a personal journey in a lot of directions, but I do think that he's right that it does predict the future, whether that means it's because we all know what the future already holds and it's just coming through, or that life actually imitates art, or is, I guess, the one that I just explained, or does art imitate life? I don't know. I mean, that's that chicken and the egg shit again. And I don't necessarily want to say anything derogatory about Goro. I just kind of feel like from what the people I've talked to seem to have more of a personal attachment to sync.
Yeah.
Well, so he's not trying to sell. It's not so crass as that he's creating an infrastructure of commercializing sync, because his whole purpose is discovering your individual truth. So it's basically like Jung's individuation, and this is the most effective way of reaching your goal. But sometimes you do need to screw up to get, you know what I mean? So he's saying that time is so valuable that the only way to be as effective as possible is to hunt the black swans, you know, which takes a lot of the joy out of it, because it's a lot of fun hunting black swans. But, I don't know where I was going with that. Chime in.
Well, I don't know. It's just the same thing.
Yeah.
Over and over. I just enjoy doing
it. I was going to say, so Goro isn't, it's not as, it's not as commercialized as all that. It's not, you know, the goal isn't to predict the future. The goal is to discover truth, which is kind of what I thought was also the case in your piece. There's a lot of possibility, but if you follow your path, you know, you'll be able to determine where you need to be, and sync will help you.
My piece, I don't know what it's about, but I got a lot out of it as far as allowing yourself to understand certain things are true. And I think that you said the same thing as what Goro, you know, you have to allow yourself to realize, but I think Jake has done that as well. Like, Jake's totally taken the fear out of it. And what it has allowed him to do is see all these other things that he might have thrown away as unimportant before. And I think his original definition of seeing significance in the mundane is still valid, because that's what it does. Our minds throw everything it thinks that's not important or contradictory to our belief systems out, and it's just not having a belief system so you can allow yourself to get new information. I think that's what Robert Anton Wilson said a lot too. I feel like we're all kind of saying the same thing though, in a way.
Yeah. We are quickly running out of our 42 minutes, and so I just wanted to give both Kevin and Tommy an opportunity to say something real fast before. Go ahead. If you had anything you wanted to add, Kevin, you have about a minute.
Sure. I guess I just had a thought about the goal, I guess, you know. Just thinking about, you know, like what the forefathers of these kind of arts and stuff, you know, Robert Wilson and PKD and all these other people, I think the goal would be to just, like, you know, be you and let that, you know, I don't know, because it's not about us, but I guess, like, the role of the synchronistic artist or something, I feel like, is to, you know, like I said, harvest truth, but then also, like reproduce it and allow it to enrich things and, you know, pass it on to other people, because, you know, for me, that's what stuff like Cosmic Trigger did, and, you know, Terrence McKenna and other people like that, you know, they use their experiences to just allow the reader to be open to those potentials and stuff. So, yeah, just, I guess, in terms of the goal of all this stuff, I really hope that it enriches people's lives and helps them to put out what they, what might enrich the universe, you know. So that's just
what I was thinking. Real fast?
Real fast? Damn it.
What's the last name?
At a minute.
What? Okay. Damn it. Okay. All I have to say is, you know, let it come to you, you know, as far as sing goes. Like, let it come to you when you see it, you know, take note of it. But I wouldn't say to really, like, look for it, even though, like, when you do look for it, you will find it. But I feel like it's something that, in order for it to really be meaningful, it has to just happen. Like, you really, it's, to me, it's like a little signal that you're in tune with something, like you're resonating with whatever, you know, the larger process as a whole, which is funny because it's like one step and then you're, like, integrated into, like, the entire universe and whatever lies beyond
that. Sounds great. We're going to have to end it there. It was fun, Will. We'll talk to everyone again next week. Take care, everyone.
Much love, everybody. Bye.